720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us on this absolutely beautiful, almost springtime Saturday afternoon. Lots of people out on Michigan Avenue today looking less bundled up than they have in previous months, which I'm super, super excited about. People are smiling with sunshine on them. I love it. Well, my friends, we've got a lot to get to today on the program. We're going to be talking about companies that take a stand on a lot of social justice issues. We've talked a lot about profit and purpose on this show, but we'll definitely be talking about companies that take a bigger stand on sometimes bigger issues, especially when they're very, 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 very polarizing. We're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about the blockbusters that are in the box offices right now, particularly one that has created an internet meme of Ben Affleck looking, his face looking very, very sad when he realizes maybe his latest project was not maybe all that he wanted it to be. But you know what, my friends, before that, I really want to talk about a day that's coming up that maybe you don't know about. March 31st is Transgender Day of Visibility. And that topic has been in the news lately because as we're looking to North Carolina, who recently called a special session for lawmakers to come back and take a look at this anti-discrimination bill that was passed. And it's really created after this special session and lawmakers kind of, you know, battling this out in North Carolina, a lot of companies have said, you know what, I don't think we're going to do business in North Carolina if that's how it's going to be. So there's a lot to this topic. And my goal here is to have a really thoughtful conversation around that today. And so joining us on the program is Megan Somerville, who is a transgender activist and writer. Welcome to the show. Pleasure to see you.
Thank you.
So tell us about Transgender Day of Visibility and all that it entails that's coming up.
It was started back in 2009 by a trans activist out of Michigan. Her name was Rachel Crandall, and she was frustrated with the lack of visibility, the lack of positive and empowering, you know, messages that was, you know, out about the transgender community. We only had one day out of the year to really mourn the people that we lost due to violence to the trans community, and that's the Trans Day of Remembrance that we have in November. And that's horrible enough. I mean, last year we lost close to 24 people due to violence, and this year we're already up to 7. But we needed a day that we could discuss issues, we can empower transgender, you know, individuals to really be visible, and also talk to our allies and talk to companies who are supportive of the LGBT community, and especially the T community that seems so marginalized, you know, especially, you know, now with so many, you know, legislation proposals and stuff that has been passed. We need our allies to step forward. I can tell my story all I want. You know, transgender, you know, men and women and, you know, youth can tell their story all they want. But we really need our allies to step forward and say, when we're not in the room, we need them to step up and speak for us.
Certainly. And when we think about, you know, workplace issues, that's something that really kind of kicked off your activism career, really.
Being an activist was something that I never even thought I would be. I've shied away from that title for a long time, but being discriminated against in the workplace really did, it did kickstart it. It's this whole path that I've been on is not something that I would have ever thought of being on, but hearing other women's stories of discrimination within their home, within their workplace and stuff, it's given me an opportunity to really help be a voice for the women that may not necessarily feel comfortable talking about their stories and talking about not having a place to go to the bathroom. A simple bodily function that we all need to do every day, but being discriminated against in such a way that they don't feel safe using the restroom at work.
Right. It is fascinating and so interesting how just the simple act of the restroom, going to the restroom,
yes,
has become so politicized just,
yes,
recently. Well, let me ask you, though, as we, you know, this past year, we saw Caitlyn Jenner on the cover of Vanity Fair. We've seen Laverne Cox, you know, have unbelievable stardom with Orange is the New Black.
Amazing advocate for the community.
Huge advocate. So are those figures in the trans community, are they helpful, or have they like hurt the cause at all in any way?
I think you're looking at two sides of the same coin. You know, Laverne Cox has done a wonderful job of being not only an advocate, but also an ally within the within media. But they are only two people. They don't tell the entire story. The trans women of color that have been brutalized all over the United States, that are losing their lives. One was shot dead on the streets of Los Angeles just this last week in broad daylight. We need to hear their stories, and we really do need to focus on how to make lives better for the average run-of-the-mill transgender person that lives in the western suburbs, lives on the north side of Chicago, lives out in the boonies of Iowa. When you see people on the media, we don't always get the full picture of what this vast community with vast experiences really entails. That's why having a day of transgender visibility, we can hear those stories. We can reach out to corporations, our allies, people that are, help influence day-to-day society and really, talk to them and see if they will support us when it comes to these issues that we are facing on a daily basis.
And so what can, a workplace, say that, management, leadership, leaders that are listening to the program, what could be done? What would be the most ideal scenario to be done in a workplace to not just observe Transgender Day of Visibility, but all year long to make it a really inclusive environment?
There are great resources through GLAAD, through the National Center for Transgender Equality. They have great resources for companies that when a company wants to be progressive enough and say, okay, we're in a day and age where we're going to probably see a transgender individual as either applying to us, or we may even have an employee that may choose to transition while in the workplace. These organizations have great resources and will have people can walk companies through the steps that they need to take to make sure that the transgender person is treated fairly and equally, and also address concerns of other employees that may not be as aware of issues or just not less, just less educated. And ignorance is not a bad thing. It's just lack of knowledge. It's the act on that ignorance that really does harm to any marginalized group.
Definitely. And so which companies, as we start thinking about and hearing about companies that are threatening to not do business in North Carolina if these discrimination laws are upheld, what companies right now are do you already feel like are good allies to the transgender community?
One of them is the Disney Corporation. I have a friend that transitioned while working for Disney, and they have been fantastic. She cannot say enough fabulous things about her, her supervisor, manager, and her team. Apple has been known to be really good to the LGBT community. NCAA has, had language, that they're inclusive to the LGBT community as well. American Airlines as well.
I was going to say, it seems like airlines were the first to recognize, same-sex benefits,
mm-hmm. Yes.
And civil unions, and I mm-hmm. think they've always kind of been very progressive.
I would caution to say always, but they have been at the forefront with some other, companies. Airlines have not always been the best. There was one case, and I'm blanking on her name, of a pilot that transitioned, and it didn't go very well for her. Mm-hmm. And that was back in the early 80s, because I remember the cases right here in Chicago. But in the modern day, now the 21st century, I think there's a lot of companies, a lot of Fortune 500 companies that have taken the role that where government should have taken and really drafted language for their human resources department and their non-discrimination policies that have really led the way. And, fortunately, here in Illinois, we're doing a fairly good job, but Illinois still has a ways to go.
Mm-hmm. What state is kind of leading the way?
California, for one. California has seen, great advancements in being able to cover for people that may not have company insurance. There's quite a few counties, in California and cities that can or will cover transition related medical expenses. So that's a huge, step forward. Illinois is one, but with legislation now being presented in Illinois, we put thousands of trans youth at risk. We have a bill that is almost a mirror image of what North Carolina just passed for our schools. It's HB 4474, and it's frightening to think what that bill might do. Trans youth face a 5 times higher suicide rate than their cis counterparts in their school. They have a higher rate of depression. They have a higher rate of behavioral issues. Many trans youth also talk about physical, mental, abuse within the schools. Sometimes it comes from teachers as well. And even when they do talk to their teachers or principals or superintendents, about 60% of them say it falls on deaf ears. Hmm. So we have a long way to go here in Illinois.
Just to make our children safe.
Yes.
And allow them to be who they are.
Yeah. And this thing is, when we allow our kids to express themselves, to be who they are, whether they're male, female, or gender fluid, somewhere in between, they do so much better in schools. They do have better grades. They're better adjusted. And they go on to much more successful lives, rather than somebody like me who had to live for 40 years hiding who I was and just really feeling isolated from the people around me all through school.
And so what about student allies? And, we talked a little bit about leadership and company policies and things like that, but what could coworkers and fellow students do to really, identify themselves as an ally to the transgender community?
One is just to be educated on the issues that are facing students, have the right vocabulary, and GLAAD and, the other organization, National Center for Transgender Equality, have good resources on making sure that you have the right vocabulary. You're not saying transgendered. It is transgender person or transgender individuals or transgender woman or man. The other things, too, is when they see bullying, they hear about bullying, act on it. Make sure that these students and employees feel safe, protected, that somebody has their back.
All right. We're talking with Megan Somerville, who is a transgender activist, and we're talking about the Transgender Day of Visibility that's coming up on March 31st. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about how this manifests online, because we talk a lot about technology on this show. We talk a lot about online civility. And I definitely want to talk about how this particular issue happens and unfolds online. We'll be right back here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We are talking with Megan Somerville, who is an activist and writer, and we're talking all about Transgender Day of Visibility, which is coming up on March 31st, and how you can be a good ally in your workplace or in your school. And we're talking all about this day and all the issues it entails. And one issue, where we are counting down the clock here, and I'm going to get you to news here in a moment. But one issue that I really want to talk about, Megan, is online, because we've talked a lot about that on this show. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about civility online, and I have to cringe a little, because I wonder how transgender persons fare online generally. I've got to assume, I think the internet is kind of a dangerous place for everybody right now, generally.
It is. The biggest thing that I can tell people is, don't read the comments on news stories. If it's going to send anybody into a tailspin about how they feel about being transgender or anything like that, don't read the comments. There's hate, there's ignorance, and there's even worse out there.
Sure. And generally, I think with this, that you're working on with on March 31st with Transgender Day of Visibility, it seems like there's been a lot of social media around it to try to kind of counter a lot of that and put a more positive narrative out there.
One of the things that I felt really strong with going into this day was being surrounded with a ton of bloggers with Chicago Now. I'm also a former cast member with Listen to Your Mother, so there's a lot of great writers there.
That's a great event.
And we want, I myself and Pamela Valentine, who is the mom of a transgender son, also a writer with Chicago Now, we felt we needed to reach out to our allies, the friends, you know, people that say they support us and are great friends to us, and really gain their support and have them really support us, you know, on social media, whether it be their Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, however it is they feel comfortable supporting, you know, the transgender community. We really wanted them to step up and, you know, say, I'm an ally.
Definitely. And so where can people find out more about both Transgender Day of Visibility, the event that happens on March 31st, and just be connected to this community online?
There's a couple different places. Facebook's one of the greatest places. It's international. One is the original site was International Transgender Day of Visibility. Also, our social media event is Transgender Day of Visibility 2016.
So if you go to Facebook and search Transgender Day of Visibility 2016,
you'll find our, you know, social media event. We have a lot of links in the discussion, and we're continuing to post links. We also, you can find myself at Megan Renee on Twitter, and this whole week leading up to the March 31st, we are doing, as many as we can get involved, we're doing a Twitter campaign and trying to reach out to as many influential Twitter accounts as we can, just asking them to be allies. And we would love people to jump on board with that. And the more people that we can get tweeting, you know, the hashtag TDOV and hashtag more than visibility, it'll start trending and more people will see it.
There you go, my friends. So TDOV is the hashtag, or more than visibility. But head to Facebook and check out Transgender Day of Visibility 2016 to connect with Megan and this wonderful community organizing that she is doing, because it is really, really important. Because as I've said many times in this station, my friends, whether we're talking about workplaces, whether we're talking about in our homes or in our schools or just walking down the street, all of our humanity is bound up together, and so it's really important to treat each other like human beings. All right, we're going to get you to news here in just a bit and be back to talk more and more about all kinds of business issues here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for tuning in today on this beautiful, and I mean beautiful, Saturday. It is sunshiny out here on Michigan Avenue, and people are smiling, and they're not so bundled up, and I think that's why they're smiling, and it's all good. Springtime is just around the corner, my friends. Here's hoping anyway. All right. We have still so much to get to on the show. We are going to be talking a little bit later in the program about when Tim Cook came out, how that kind of created a ripple effect for other companies to take on a little bit bigger and more polarizing topics as they, you know, would take a stand on things. So we're going to get to that in just a little bit. But right now, I would like to take a little detour and talk about, because it is, you know, big movie weekend, as usual, always lots of stuff going on the weekends. But the Batman, Spider-Man, Superman, man, all the superheroes. And that's all happening. But there was this really great interview. It was like a press junket in which Ben Affleck was being interviewed about his latest superhero endeavor. And he makes this face that has kind of become an internet meme in the last 24 hours or so, because I think he kind of realizes, like, uh-oh, maybe this didn't go so well. So here to talk with us from Bloomberg is Anushka Sakui. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, so talk to us a little bit about the Batman versus Superman movie for Warner Brothers, because it's really just not, I think there was so much hype, but it's just not quite having the returns that I think maybe people anticipated. But there's really a lot riding on this for Warner Brothers. Talk us through that a bit.
Sure. So a couple of years ago in 2013, Warner Brothers had a management shakeup, and they Warner Brothers had always been, you know, a leader in Hollywood. And the past couple of years, they have struggled a bit, and they haven't had the same success as some of their rivals like Disney and Universal. And, you know, they had, you know, the Harry Potter films, the Hobbit films, the Dark Knight movies that you might remember, which were very successful. But in the past couple of years, they haven't had sort of big franchise movies that, you know, much of Hollywood relies upon these days. And in particular, they wanted to focus on their DC Comics characters and try and make a bit more of them in the same way that Disney has with its Marvel characters. You know, Disney really is a machine in Hollywood when it comes to superheroes, and they've sort of set the tone for how successful a superhero movie can be. So Disney is really trying to catch up, and in 2014, the head of Warner Brothers laid out sort of a 10 superhero movie plan up until 2020. So they've got a lot of movies from their DC Comics franchise that they're planning over the next few years. And this one, Batman vs. Superman, that opens today, you know, is the first of that sort of, you know, several-year plan. And, you know, it's been sort of cloaked in secrecy, but the reviews that came out this week were not great. In fact, they were pretty scathing. And as you said, you know, it's led to some comedy, you know, the meme that you mentioned, with Ben Affleck not really wanting to, you know,
not even wanting, he doesn't want to even go there.
It
makes
really
this face
funny.
Like, I gotta go, I gotta leave.
And he's just sort of silent when Henry Cavill, who plays Superman, is sort of trying to explain away these criticisms. And you know, to some point that they're right. Okay, so the professional critics have really slammed the movie, but you know, this film is doing really well with audiences, and you know, it's expected to break records this weekend. So they've taken the two most iconic characters from DC, and they've pitted them against each other, and people are turning out to see the movie. So you know, it's still you know, it's still sort of up in the air, you know, like how it's going to turn out for them. It's obviously never great to have a movie not be well reviewed by critics, because then you sort of get limited, you know, people get some bad word of mouth. And, you know, when you've got an expensive film like this, you want as many people to come out as possible. So that does sort of hinder it a bit. But this weekend will be very big for this week, for this film. So it hasn't hurt it so far.
Right. And so you note in the story that you wrote at Bloomberg.com, you note that for it to be, for this movie, Batman versus Superman, to be as profitable as Walt Disney's Marvel movies or Warner's Dark Knight movies, we're looking at, it would have to gross about $1.15 billion worldwide. And it doesn't seem like it's tracking to do that.
I think it's, you know, it's hard to say yet because, you know, it's still, you're still going to get the Saturday registers in, and we'll see. I mean, and also the international is hard to predict as well. You know, China it's opening at the same time in China, and that has just become a huge market for Hollywood. So I wouldn't rule it out just yet, but, you know, the reviews don't help, but I wouldn't rule it out just yet that it's that it could end up doing quite well.
All right, we shall wait and see. But, you know, I think personally, not that any of the big studios are asking me, but personally, I think there are many, many films with female superheroes that need to be made before we continue remaking and remaking the ones with male superheroes. I think there are so many just cool female superheroes and characters.
Well, they are making a Wonder Woman movie, so you'll have to look out for that next
right.
year.
That's a good start, but there are still so many cool superhero ladies with swords and guns and, you know, lots of, you know, butt kicking. I'm all in favor of that. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Everybody, head over to Bloomberg.com and check out this story. It is written by Anushka Sekhui. Thank you so much for joining us today and breaking it all down for us. And we shall keep an eye on that box office for Batman versus Superman and see if it makes that $1.15 billion. Thanks very much. All right. So, my friends, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we are talking about companies that felt a little more, perhaps, bold to jump onto very polarizing issues after something happened at Apple. We will talk about that when we come back here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate you tuning in. My friends, you know, there's so much in the news right now. We're in such a I think, very polarizing time in our world. It's an election year. There's lots of topics. But as you may know, North Carolina this week convened a special section with a special session, rather, with lawmakers to talk about an anti-discrimination bill. And it's a lot. There's a lot of conversation about this on social media and just, you know, at the water cooler. And a lot of people are talking about this. And so there's a story that's really interesting that I encourage you to check out. It's a Washington Post, and it's all about what happened, if we rewind a little bit, what happened when Apple's Tim Cook, the CEO who took over after Steve Jobs died, after he came out publicly, because it seems to be that what happened was, to a large extent, other companies felt a little more empowered to take a stand on issues that otherwise companies kind of felt like they had to, on some level, stay out of. So joining us right now is the author of that piece, Jeff Guo. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Amy, thanks for having me.
Certainly, glad you could join us. Well, so talk us through this, because it does seem like that was a very memorable moment when here's this corporate leader who came out and wrote this op-ed and really called for a lot more inclusive corporate environment. But I have to wonder, you know, there had to have been examples earlier, but it seems like this was just the one that had everybody's attention. Talk to us a bit about that.
And I think the reason that it really caught everybody's attention was that it seemed to come out of nowhere. And this was, you know, this was last year when Indiana was and Arkansas were passing their so-called religious freedom bills that gay rights groups were very angry about, right? And the local business leaders had stepped in and said, well, we really don't want this. We're Indianans. We don't think that this represents Indiana values. And then here comes Tim Cook out of nowhere. Apple has, I think, two stores or one store in Indiana. And he comes in and he writes this op-ed in the Washington Post talking about how these bills are damaging. And he really made an impact in the media, at least, and everybody was talking about this. And so the question that these professors at Harvard and Duke business schools were wondering is, first, how much of an impact did Tim Cook actually make on people's opinions? And second, did this backfire for Apple? Did this affect Apple sales? Did this create bad associations for Apple, because not everybody would have agreed with Tim Cook. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how does that affect your business? And so what they found was really interesting. First, what they found was that Tim Cook was a good advocate, and he did change people's opinions. But when they showed his statements to people, they found that people's opinions weren't really changed that much by the fact that this was Tim Cook saying the message. So they tried showing people just general messages about these bills, talking about how these bills might be discriminatory, and people's minds were changed. And then they showed them a different statement that had the weight of Tim Cook's reputation behind it. It didn't seem to make a big difference. Mm. And so what they found was that really what was happening here is that Tim Cook was using his fame, his notoriety, his ability to get a op-ed in a major national newspaper. That was the important part. He was using his fame as a way to draw attention to this issue. And celebrities do this all the time.
Sure.
But people didn't really think that it wasn't really his reputation that was doing the persuading. Mm-hmm. It was just the fact that he could get all this attention directed at these bills.
Certainly.
And so that was the first finding.
Yeah. And the second group of findings, when they took a look at whether or not this backfired on Apple's bottom line, what did they find there?
And that's what's interesting. They found that it actually made people more likely to say that they wanted to buy Apple products. And so it seemed to confer some kind of a warm glow onto Apple. And this was especially strong. This effect was really strong among people who agreed with Tim Cook's opinion. But what was interesting is that among people who didn't agree with Tim Cook's opinion, among people who opposed gay marriage, these people, they were slightly less likely to want to buy Apple products, but it wasn't really a big effect. It didn't really seem to change their minds that much in other words. And so it really galvanized the people who already agreed with Tim Cook, and it didn't really seem to make much of a difference among people who disagreed with Tim Cook. And so this seemed to be a really effective strategy. Not only did it raise awareness of this issue, but it also seemed to make people a little bit more likely to buy Apple products.
It is really interesting. And, you know, the shift that really seems very obvious to me is, I think before that, we saw a lot of companies where the profit and purpose was closely intertwined. You know, I'm thinking of Tom's Shoes, where you buy the pair and then you, by doing that, you've generated, you know, the company would then give a pair of shoes to a person in need. You know, and other companies that like that, that had such a closely intertwined social, you know, sense of social responsibility with their profit. But this seems like it took it up a step, because that's when I feel like we started seeing a lot of people taking a little bit broader stand. You know, I'm thinking of Sheryl Sandberg, the way she started talking about with her book Lean In, started talking about gender discrimination in the workplace, and the Goldman Sachs executive who also weighed in on gay marriage. And it seems like, you know, 5-10 years ago, that's just not something a company would have tackled, or at least a spokesperson speaking on behalf of a company.
Right, that's exactly right. And another example would be Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. He did this Race Together campaign last year, which wasn't received that well, but he wanted baristas to start conversations with their customers about race and Ferguson and policing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's totally unrelated to selling coffee, and it probably, you know, these kinds of conversations probably made people uncomfortable, but he felt, you know, I think a moral obligation to do some of these things. And I think you're totally right. This is something that we're really starting to see. We're starting to see CEOs, major sort of corporate public figures starting to take these moral stances. And that's something that the professors that I talked to, this is Aaron Chatterjee and Steve Michael Toffel at Harvard, they thought this was very strange as well. This is something that they noticed, and they published an op-ed in the Harvard Business Review about this. And they said that this is, and they study corporate responsibility. And the traditional way they said that corporations do this is they donate to charities. McDonald's has a charity for children, that sort of thing. But it's really unusual to see so many CEOs taking these very controversial social stances, or stances on controversial social opinions. And that's it's very strange. And that's why they did this research.
Right. It is very interesting, because now it is less about the company standing for something, right? You know, great example that you used, how McDonald's has long stood for the Ronald McDonald House and caring for children and families in times of serious illness. And that's something I think a lot of people associate and know that's a way that McDonald's gives back. But we've never seen a single person do it. And I think that's kind of the interesting shift, is now we're seeing these leaders having, you know, feeling so morally obligated to speak against issues that ethically are way on them, which is really interesting. So what do you think, do you think this is the new future and then kind of the new normal of how we will see our leadership, and we will expect our leaders to be this, this bold and aggressive about taking a stand on moral issues?
I think that it maybe reflects the fact that we feel that we have started to have higher expectations for our companies to be ethical, and we have started to have higher expectations for our celebrities and for our public figures to not just be bland, but to really stand up for the things that they believe in. And I think that what the research shows is that even if you disagree with someone, I think you would at least respect them when they make such a stand, and when they put profits at risk to make a statement. But in this case, as we've seen, sometimes it's actually great for the bottom line as well.
It's very, very interesting. Everybody, head over to WashingtonPost.com and check out this story. It's written by Jeff Guo. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us on the program today. Have a great Saturday.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Okay, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you turned over to news, and then off to King John. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN.